Last week on Thomas and the Bible, apparently the Corinthians aren't quite ready for the Pasal. They've been wasting their time on things like philosophy and science. For Christ's sake, forget about that. Just listen to Pasal. Having gotten their interest, he focuses on fornication and judging people. And oddly enough, not judging people. He then starts a long tradition in the Christian church by telling them that even though he isn't married and doesn't sleep with women, he is somehow an expert on who should get married and have sex. What fascinating nuggets will we get this week? Personally, I'd kill for a parable just to break up the monotony. Maybe we'll luck out this week in Thomas and the Bible.
Thanks for the great intro as usual, Kevin. Welcome to Thomas and the Bible, everyone. So, normally at this hour, you'd be watching Plant World. But no, that's not really. If you aren't on the Facebook, and by that I mean my Facebook page for Thomas and the Bible, not like the Facebook, like I'm an old person trying to just, hey, are you on the Facebook? Anyway, if you're not on the Thomas and the Bible Facebook, as in you like the page so you don't receive news from me, you will be maybe surprised that this episode is roughly a day later than it normally is. Well, I came to the obvious conclusion, in retrospect, incredibly obvious realization that I'm killing myself unnecessarily by releasing Thomas and the Bible and Atheistically Speaking on the same exact night. I've been doing this for, what, 2 years or a year and a half? I don't know. It might be 2 years. And it's Wednesday nights I just dread. They're the worst. I'm trying to get everything done for both shows on time. So I've decided I'm just going to delay T and the B, and it will now happen on Thursday nights for me, which will mean probably like first thing Friday, super, super early a.m., or maybe you'll get it Thursday night, depending on when it goes up, but sometime then. So sorry for the inconvenience there, but that's the deal. If you'd like to know that ahead of time, check out the Facebook. Just search for Thomas and the Bible on Facebook and give it a like. I don't post much, but I just, you know, when there's news or, you know, episodes, I post. So, all right, well, we're on 1 Corinthians 9 through 13 today. And I got to warn you, there's some boring / semi-incomprehensible stuff in this. It's a bad sign when I'm reading the New International Version in order to study it, which I do. I read that in order to make sure I'm getting the meaning better. And then, of course, I'm reading KJV for you guys. And it's a bad sign when it's hard to understand even in the New International Version, where it's like translated better. It's, you know, it's clearer. It's a bad sign when that's hard. So we'll see how we do. Am I not an apostle? Are you not impressed? Are you not entertained? He says, am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? Are not ye my work in the Lord? If I be not an apostle unto others, yet doubtless I am to you. For the seal of mine apostleship are ye in the Lord. Mine answer to them that do examine me is this. Have we not power to eat and drink? Let's see where he's going with this. Have we not power to lead about a sister, a wife, as well as other apostles, and as the brethren of the Lord and Cephas? Or I only and Barnabas, have not we power to forbear working? Who goeth a warfare any time at his own charges? Who planteth a vineyard and eateth not the fruit thereof? Or who feedeth a flock and eateth not the milk thereof? Of the flock. Say I these things as a man, or saith not the law of the same also? For it is written in the law of Moses, thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn. Doth God take care for oxen? So that's kind of a good sentence there. I like that writing, actually. Thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn. So it's funny because right before reading this, you don't know where he's going. He's like, hey, shouldn't I be able to benefit from the priesthood? He's essentially saying, here's all these examples of if you grow a vineyard, you know, you get to eat the grapes. That's what you get to do. If you're a Catholic priest, you get to rape the kids. I mean, it's one of the benefits. He's sort of going down that line of reasoning. And I really actually like that sentence that muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn. So that makes sense. You let the ox eat whatever. You've got the ox working for you. Let him eat the corn that he's treading out. Doth God take care for oxen? Or saith he it altogether for our sakes? For our sakes, no doubt, this is written, that he that ploweth should plow in hope, and he and that he that thresheth in hope should be a partaker of his hope. So then it gets, so he's like, oh, I'm giving you guys hope, so I get to also have hope. And it's like, oh, I thought you were going to ask if you could have sex with our wives or something. I thought it was going to be something like that. So naturally, I get to do whatever I want to my followers. But no, he sounds more honorable, I guess. If we have sown unto you spiritual things, is it a great thing if we shall reap your carnal things? Oh, here we go. If others be partakers of this power over you, are not we rather? Nevertheless, we have not used this power, but suffer all things, lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. Do ye not know that they which minister about holy things live of the things of the temple, and they which wait at the altar are partakers with the altar? Even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. But I have used none of these things. So now he's saying like he's better than all that. So even though normal priests get to, you know, rape the kids, I've decided I will not partake. No, not really. He's saying like since normally people, you know, get to benefit from the offerings, like they get a piece, they get their cut, you know. But he's saying Pasal is so great. He's just so great. He's such a good guy that he's like, I'm not even benefiting. I am not even benefiting because I don't want to be accused of, you know, essentially a conflict of interest here. He doesn't want to taint the word of the Lord by doing that. But I have used none of these things, neither have I written these things, that it should be done unto me. For it were better for me to die than that any man should make my glorying void. So, you know, fair enough. All right, fair play. For though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of, for necessity is laid upon me. Yea, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. So it sounds to me as though, you know, people who run mega churches should perhaps take heed of this. Maybe Joel Osteen needs to read 1 Corinthians, well, what is it, 8? No, 1 Corinthians 9, sorry. Maybe he needs to read 1 Corinthians 9 pretty much in its entirety. To see what he's saying here, because it's pretty easy to look at a guy with super fake white teeth and, you know, private jet and a giant mansion and all that and be like, I think that somewhat taints the Lord's message when the guy who's giving you the message is making kajabajillions of majillions of kablillions of dollars. They have to invent new words for how much money Joel Osteen has because the normal ones don't even work. So maybe he needs to, maybe people should point him to this part. For if I do this thing willingly, I have reward, but against my will, a dispensation of the gospel is committed unto me. What is my reward then? Verily, that when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge, that I abuse not my power in the gospel. For though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant unto all, that I might gain the more. And unto the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. This is not dissimilar from the monologue in the beginning of Inglourious Basterds. And about the Jews, in order to find the Jews, you have to think like a Jew. And unto the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law, as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without the law, it's kind of similar, a little bit similar. To them that are without the law, as without the law, being not without the law to God, but under the law to Christ, that I might gain them that are without the law. So this is kind of weird. It's like he's saying, like, oh, I both... And when it says with the law, without the law, all that, I think it means the ancient, you know, Jewish laws that are in the Old Testament and all that. It sounds like he's saying, well, I was that. I you know, became as a Jew and in order to kind of find Jews under basements and stuff. No, in order to like gather them to my side. And then I became with one without the law, meaning not, you know, I guess, not following the Old Testament, I think. In order to, you know, relate to people who did that, does he have to go through basically every possibility of being like, well, then I went over to, Buddhism and I practiced under that so that I might gain them as my followers. To the weak I became I as weak, that I might gain the weak. Well, he is going to go through every possible way of being. I am made all things to all men that I might by all means save some. This guy has a high opinion of himself. And this I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be partaker thereof with you. Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one which receiveth the prize, so run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainty, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself shall be a castaway. All right, on to Corinthians 10. So that was basically about how Pasal is just so great, because he's with the plebs. He's one of us, you know. He's like, oh, I've flown economy class. I understand how you people, you know, operate, and I feel like I'm one of you. Moreover, brethren, I would not that ye should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea, and all were baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea. Wow, he predicted the cloud. Who would have thought? And did all eat the same spiritual meat, and did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with many of them God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now these things were our examples, to the intent we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted. Neither be ye idolaters, as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink, and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed, and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted, and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured, and were destroyed of the destroyer. Now all these things happened unto them for examples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. Oh yeah, the end of the world, by the way, it's happening any minute, any minute. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. I feel like that's been quoted before. I just feel like it, you know. I mean, I can't prove it, but I feel like it has. There hath no temptation taken you but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it. So there you go. There's some real harmful ideology right there. So it's his belief, just based on, you know, nothing, roughly speaking, or based on the fact that he's seen Jesus in a vision once. Pasal's whole deal is, look, God will never tempt you more than you can handle. And there will always be an escape. So, you know, drug addicts, people with major psychological problems, there's a way out of it. You can bear it. You know, people with depression who are suicidal, you're fine. I mean, it's tough, but God never tempts you more than you can bear, you know. How do I know that? Oh, just because that would be good. How can I prove that? Well, just because that would, you know, if there is a God who I believe in who would do this, then therefore it exists and that he would do. Like, there's no reason to think this, certainly, but Pasal has declared it, and thus that's a really bad way of judging other people. It's a really bad way of looking at other people, where you can really blame them for things that otherwise you probably shouldn't blame them for. Wherefore, my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry. I speak as to wise men, judge ye what I say. The cup of blessings which we bless, is it not the communion of the blood of Christ? The bread which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Christ? For we being many who are one bread and one body, for we are all partakers of that one bread. Behold, Israel after the flesh, are not they which eat of the sacrifices partakers of the altar? What say I then, that the idol is anything, or that which is offered in sacrifice to idols is anything? But I say that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to devils, and not to God. And I would not that ye should have fellowship with devils. Ye cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of devils. Ye cannot be partakers of the Lord's table and of the table of devils. Do we provoke the Lord to jealousy? Are we stronger than he? I love this. This I loved because he's like, look, it so proves that his understanding of God is it. I don't even think, well, whatever. There's always the escape hatch of, oh, it's figurative. Oh, it's just a metaphor. But when he asks, like, look, don't worship other gods. Don't offer sacrifices to other gods. Do you want to make the Lord jealous? He could take you. Like, he's essentially saying, like, are we stronger than he is? He says, are we stronger than he? Like, yeah, sure. It would be fine to provoke him to jealousy if, you know, we could bench more than God or we could beat God in arm wrestling. But since he's so strong, you know, like, come on, back off. You don't want to piss him off, you know, which is such a human thing to think. Like, this all-powerful God is going to get jealous. It's complete nonsense. All things are lawful for me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but all things edify not. Let no man seek his own, but every man another's wealth. Let no man seek his own, but every man another's wealth. That's interesting. Whatsoever is sold in the shambles that eat, asking no question for conscience sake, for the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. If any of them that believe not bid you to a feast, and ye be disposed to go, whatsoever is set before you, eat, asking no questions for conscience sake. But if any man say unto you, this is offered in sacrifice unto idols, eat not for his sake that shoot it, and for conscience sake, for the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. So if anyone offers you a sacrifice for like another god, you have to refuse, basically. Conscience, I say, not thine own thing, not thine own, but of the other. For why is my liberty judged of another man's conscience? For if I by grace be a partaker, why am I evil spoken of for that for which I give thanks? Why am I evil spoken of for that for which I give thanks? Whether therefore ye eat or drink, or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God. Give none offense neither to the Jews nor the Gentiles, nor to the church of God, even as I please all men and all things, not seeking mine own profit, but for the profit of many, that they may be saved. So he's just saying, like, don't eat those sacrifices to other gods or to the devils or whatever. Just do everything for God, 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 blah, blah, blah. That's pretty much it. That's pretty much God this, God that, something like that. All right, 1 Corinthians 11. Be followers of me, even as I am also of Christ. Now I praise you, brethren, that you remember in all things and keep the ordinances as I delivered them to you. But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of every woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God. Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonoreth his head. But every woman that prayeth or prophesieth with her head uncovered dishonoreth her head, for that is even all one as if she were shaven. Sure, good sound logic there. I can't argue with that. For if the woman be not covered, please do explain. Please do mansplain. Pasal splain why men need to not cover their heads, but women need to cover their heads in order to pray. I cannot wait for this explanation. For if the woman be not covered, let her also be shorn. But if it be a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven, let her be covered. Wow. Wow. Another bombshell of logic there. For a man indeed ought not to cover his head, for as much as he is the image and glory of God, but the woman is the glory of man. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. For this cause ought the woman to have power on her head. What? To have power? Power on her head because of the angels. Wow, he's gone off the rails. Nevertheless, neither is the man without the woman, neither the woman without the man in the Lord. So, one thing to point out is this means he literally believes Genesis. So, contrary to the thing where it's like, oh, no, everyone knew Genesis was fake. It was never meant to be read as, well, I don't know. It sounds like here we've got Pasal, creator of all of Christianity, essentially, saying, well, here's Because women were made from man, who's the rib, and then the man was made from God. So there's therefore all this crap about you have to cover the... God, it's so good. It's so good. I love the... like, he was like, okay, you know why women should be covered? Because women should be covered. Okay? So, thus, women should be covered, essentially, is the... Like, no one told him, because no one would argue with it back then. No one told him, like, hey, when you say, like, why women should be covered, you actually have to have, like, a reason after that. You can't just say it again. He's like, oh, okay, that's how... no one ever told him that, because he really just says, like, well, because if she was uncovered, it would be like if she had her hair shorn. And if she had her hair shorn, that's ridiculous. So she should be covered. You see, the complex. That's literally the reasoning. It is so funny to see the just like nothing of a reason that they have for these things. Let's see. For as the woman is of the man, even so is the man also by the woman, but all things of God. Judge in yourselves, is it comely that a woman pray unto God uncovered? Doth not even nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it is a shame unto him? But if a woman have long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering. But if any man seem to be contentious, we have no such custom, neither the churches of God. Now in this that I declare unto you, I praise you not, that ye come together not for the better, but for the worst. For first of all, when ye come together in the church, I hear that there be divisions among you, and I partly believe it. For there also must be heresies among you, that they which are proved may be made manifest among you. When ye come together, therefore, into one place, this is not to eat the Lord's supper. For in eating every one taketh before the other his own supper, and one is hungry, and another is drunken. He's lost me. What, have ye not houses to eat and drink in, or despise ye the church of God, and shame them that would have not? What shall I say to you? Shall I praise you in this? I praise you not. For I have received of the Lord that which also I delivered unto you, that the Lord Jesus, the same night in which he was betrayed, took bread. And when he had given thanks, he brake it and said, take, eat, this is my body, for which is broken for you, this do in remembrance of me. After the same manner also he took the cup, which he had supped, saying, this cup is the New Testament in my blood. This do ye, as oft as ye drink, in remembrance of me. For as often as ye eat this bread and drink this cup, ye do shew the Lord's death till he come. Wherefore, whosoever shall eat this bread and drink this cup of the Lord unworthily shall be guilty of the body and blood of the Lord. But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of that bread and drink of that cup. For he that eateth and drinketh unworthily eateth and drinketh damnation to himself, not discerning the Lord's body. For this cause many are weak and sickly among you, and many sleep. For if we would judge ourselves, we should not be judged. But when we are judged, we are chastened of the Lord, that we should not be condemned with the world. Wherefore, my brethren, when ye come together to eat, tarry one for another. If any man hunger, let him eat at home, that ye come not together unto condemnation. And the rest, And the rest will I set in order when I come. There we go. So, there's some positive messages, I guess. He's like, make sure you have food and whatever, because then God's going to judge you. And I think there's a little bit more about how the end of the world is coming any minute now. That seems to be a pretty common theme. Corinthians 12. Now, concerning spiritual gifts, brethren, I would not have you ignorant. Ye know that ye were Gentiles, carried away unto these dumb idols, even as ye were led. Wherefore, I give you to understand that no man speaking by the Spirit of God calleth Jesus accursed, and no man can say that Jesus is the Lord but by the Holy Ghost. And now there are diversities of gifts, but the same Spirit. And there are diversities of administrations, but the same Lord. And there are diversities of operations, but it is the same God which worketh in all. But the manifestations of the Spirit is given to every man to profit with all. For to one is given by the Spirit the word of wisdom, to another the word of knowledge by the same Spirit, to another faith by the same Spirit, to another the gifts of healing by the same Spirit, to another the working of miracles, prophecy, blah, 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 another discerning spirits, diverse kinds of tongues, another the interpretation of tongues. But all these worketh that one and the selfsame Spirit, dividing to every man severally as he will. For as the body is one, and hath many members, all the members of that one body, being many, are one body, so also is Christ. So this is like the most boring thing. I read this and it's just third grade level logic. It's not impressive. We all have our different things, and it's so boring. He's like a teacher condescending to a bunch of kids about like, well, you have this toy and he has that toy. Now they're different toys and that's okay. Like, it's essentially that, except apparently with spiritual gifts or maybe like character traits. I don't know exactly. It's like the differences, diversities of gifts, whatever, the same. So it's just saying, like, even though people are different and have different functions, you know, it's all the one God. It all comes from the one God. And now we get to hear even that, in case you didn't accept that, just because it's like, yeah, I get it, that's fine, whatever. He has to drive it home for another half hour here. If the foot shall say, because I am not the hand, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? Ooh, you got me. And if the ear shall say, because I am not the eye, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? If the whole body were an eye, where were the hearing? If the whole body were hearing, where were the smelling? But now hath God set the members, every one of them in the body, as it hath pleased him. And if they were all one member, where were the body? Oh, you got me. This is such good logic. I couldn't have thought of this myself. But now are they many members, but yet one body. And the eye cannot say unto the hand, I have no need of thee, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. Nay, much more those members of the body which seem to be more feeble are necessary. And those members, basically the underlings, he's like, people don't matter. It's the opium of the masses here. It's people who, you know, are just, that they maybe they're poor. I don't know what he's going for here, but it seems to me that he could be talking to people who have a bad lot in life. And he's like, oh, you know, it takes all kinds. We're all part of the body here. And God made you and all that nonsense. And those members of the body which we think to be less honorable, upon those we bestow more abundant honor. And our uncomely parts have more abundant comeliness. For our comely parts have no need, but God hath tempered the body together, having given more abundant honor to that part which lacked, that there should be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care one for another. And whether one member suffer, all the members suffer with it, or one member be honored, all the members rejoice with it. Now ye are the body of Christ, and members in particular. And God hath set some in the church, first apostles, secondarily prophets, thirdly teachers, after that miracles, then gifts of healing, helps, governments, diversity of tongues, and all apostles, what about janitors? We got garbage men, all that. And are all prophets? So it's like an unfairness. Again, it's like a teacher who's like, now we don't all get to be prophets. We're not all, some of us like me, yeah, sure, I'm a prophet. But, you know, we don't all have to be prophets. Some of us have to be, gotta dig ditches and stuff. You know, we can't all be prophets. It's okay. It's fine. I'm a prophet. You're not. It's no big deal. Have all the gifts of healing? Do all speak with tongues? Do all interpret? But covet earnestly the best gifts, and yet shew I unto you a more excellent way. Yeah, a more excellent way is just mind your own business, is what he's getting at. Corinthians 13. Though I speak with the tongues of men and angels, wow, and have not charity, I am become as sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy, oh, you do, huh? And understand all mysteries. He understands all, and all knowledge. And though I have all faith, so that I could remove mountains and have not charity, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, And though I give my body to be burned, and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing. Charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up. So I guess I don't know if he's talking about some hypothetical thing like, you know, oh, if you're someone who has all the understanding in the world, then you actually have, it doesn't matter because if you're not charitable. So he probably doesn't, I took it to mean that he literally meant he has the gift of prophecy. Well, I don't know. I can't tell, but whatever. I'll try to give him the benefit of the doubt and say he's just saying hypothetically, no matter what qualities he has, if he doesn't have charity, then he's nothing. So that's good. Charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Charity never faileth, but whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. For we know in part, and we prophesy, and prophesy in part. But when that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away. When I was a child, I spake as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. Oh, I know that saying. I've heard that. For now we see through a glass, darkly. But then, face to face, I've heard that too. Now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I know even as also I am known. And now abideth faith, hope, charity, these three, but the greatest of these is charity. So, charity. All right, not a bad message. I'll give it that. I will give it that, Mr. Bible. And that's the end of our reading. I would like to thank my lovely patrons. I have a few new ones. Philip Gatt, thank you so much, Philip. And David, thank you very, very much, both of you, for pledging at patreon.com/TNTheB. And of course, I got to thank my all-time greats. That's John Bodley. That's Chris Lukowski, Marcel, Philip Gatt, Angus McGillicuddy, Sarah McPike, Japan Dan, Stacey Sweeney, George Green, Charles Bangwiener, Tom Chambers, Brian Gearfort, Lee Primesberger, John P., Travis Peterson, Heriberto, and Rob. Thank you guys most kindly for the support. It's much appreciated. You make the show go round. I've been Thomas. This has been the Bible. And yeah, I think that's all I have to say. See you next, I suppose, next Friday, because that's the new day of this show. All right, see ya.